Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them, from the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. My guest today is Andrew Scrivani, and he is the author of a book, That Photo Makes Me Hungry, and he specializes in food photography. And I know that's a little outside the realm of what we do, but bear with me now. Andrew, tell us something about yourself, and we'll jump into some questions.
Well, besides being a food photographer for the better part of the last 20 years, I have a number of other creative interests. I'm a film producer. I'm a commercial director. Obviously, you've mentioned my book as an author. And something I'm very proud of is I am a certified executive coach. So I coach other creatives about what it's, you know, not just creatives, but many creatives in terms of what it's like to be a professional in the creative industries. So those are things that I've been a teacher before I was a photographer, and then teaching sort of kept pulling me back. So I've taught lots of workshops. I've done a lot of on-camera stuff in terms of teaching people about photography and creativity. And so, yeah, I've been doing a whole lot of stuff. And the photography part was the kickoff, and everything else sort of followed from there.
Well, you're a living example of what it's like to live as a creative.
Yes. Indeed.
There's a lot of weaving and dodging.
Yes, lots of tendrils out there. You have to kind of, and this is one of those lessons that I talk to a lot of photographers about, is if you think you're going to do just one thing in this business, the business will teach you better. Because it's, you have to be flexible, you have to evolve, you have to be able to understand the ups and downs of freelance life, the stress involved in freelance life, learning how to take care of yourself and your wellness when you are dealing with that kind of stress. So there's an awful lot of interesting approaches to dealing with those issues. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have a very captive audience, quite honestly. I had the food photography space to myself for a little while, but that's not the case anymore.
Well, let's jump into the food photography, since that's how you came to my attention with that book, sure. That Photo mm-hmm. Makes Me Hungry, which just looking at the cover makes me hungry because it's chocolate. Let's talk about that, how you were in the space for a long time by yourself. So what would you see as the evolution of food imagery and, you know, how it originated? I mean, if we look at 1950s magazines, the food pictures in that are not even close to what the food pictures are today. And if you go back to the 1900, those food illustrations are nothing compared to what we have today. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, it's something I've touched on before, and I think it's a really interesting piece, is that I didn't really have any food photography mentors. It was something I became interested in looking at the Dutch master's paintings, looking at Caravaggio and the way he used light. And all of the great Renaissance masters and those who came after them who took on food as a subject did so in a very romanticized way. When I began doing this, those were my frames of reference and the kinds of things I was interested in creating as a photographer is that use of light and shadow with food and making it feel as if I walk into a room and I see food on a table. What's it going to look like? What's it going to look like if the light is coming in from this side of the room? What's it going to look like if the light is coming from that side of the room? So I tried to keep a realistic view of food in our world as we experience it, but also the idea that we romanticize food in a way because it's such a big part of our lives. And it's a very big storytelling element in our culture. It you know, revolves around the calendar. It revolves around our religion and our culture and all of the other things that have become part of the narrative of food photography. So I've seen that evolution. And then when I got to food photography, I was able to implement that. And because I had such a big platform with the New York Times in a time when pre-social media, there weren't that many outlets for food photography, and it wasn't something that people necessarily identified as a food photographer. Those were still life photographers who became guys who shot food or women who shot food, you know? And then it was later in the 2000s where food photography became in a sort of a cultural touch point because of social media. And then that evolution sort of just kept happening stylistically.
Right. So what's so interesting about this in terms of future, well, not future, present day, even photo collections that people are taking now is it's a rare person that hasn't snapped a picture of a really good meal. Now, does it look as good in the picture as what it tasted on the, you know, when you ate it? That's another matter. So your job as a food photographer is to make the food look as good as we remember it tasting.
Or creating an image that makes you believe that what you're experiencing was elevated on some level.
Oh, that too.
Yeah. That too. You know, the idea that maybe it doesn't look, maybe it doesn't taste as good as it looks, but you'll never know that by looking at it. So you're creating a different sensory observational experience for people where you're eating with your eyes, right? You're right. You're imagining what it might taste like. You're using your imagination to embody what's happening on the page or on the screen. And I think that part of it is, as a storyteller, is the part that I think is very engaging for me. Is I talk, when I teach young photographers, especially with food, I talk about this continuum that happens between the time ingredients are born, whether that be on the farm or in the grocery or pulling them out of your refrigerator, to the time when you have empty plates. And a lot of times, food photographers focus on one very specific moment in that continuum, which is perfect food, hasn't been touched yet. Nothing has happened yet. It's pristine. I don't always like living in that moment because I don't feel like there's any notion of human interaction in that moment. Other than, yes, somebody put this together. Mm-hmm. But when you back up a couple of steps while the food is being created or jump forward a couple of steps when the food is being consumed, It's inherent that human beings are participating in the food. And that's one of those things I've always felt in my work is drawn people toward that experience because they can imagine themselves there rather than just admiring the beautiful photo of the food that's perfect and hasn't been touched. They imagine themselves in the moment with the food, which is very different.
Right. So I've been in this cleaning out phase and I went through my camera roll and I don't photograph my food all the time, mm-hmm. but frankly, I have food allergies. And when I go to a restaurant and a meal is like unbelievably good, I have to catalog it with a picture because I want to remember where I was so I can go back and have it again. Mm-hmm. Our camera rolls can be filled with pictures of food. And what does that, from my perspective, what does that mean for our digital photo collections as individuals? I mean, we're not professional food photographers. I see stuff on social media and people say, oh, I made, you know, this dish, and you look at the picture and you go, I don't know if I would eat that dish. So what does it all mean? Where do you think this is all going with the democratization of food photography?
I mean, I think it's really an interesting question, because when you were saying that, it made me think of something, is that like clothing and fashion, hairstyles, makeup, the kinds of things that are culturally attached to a time frame, I think food does the same thing. I said, if I took a picture of my mother's sort of cocktail parties in the 70s with ambrosia salad and, you know, the cheese in the little crock with the wine strips through it, if I put those on, on Instagram tomorrow, people might be saying, what is that? That is a strange, those are some strange things, right? And every era has that. And I think that's maybe when you're looking back at your film roll in 20 years, you know, because eating habits change, because the types of trends that happen in terms of how we're eating and how we're presenting food are going to look different. So I think it's in essence, it's creating a timeline. It's a temporal experience that you're able to go back and look at a dish, or look at a meal that you had, or even at a restaurant that no longer exists, and say, wow, that was a real moment in time, and trigger those memories just the way smell or other sensory inputs make us remember, especially taste. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, think about the Jell-O molds of the 60s.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right. And, you know, there's a nostalgia there for those things now, because everybody's looking for something new and different too. And retro happens in all cultural forms, right? Like we said, clothes, hairstyles, the way people wear makeup, you know, all of those things become cyclical. So I think the fact that we're all photographing and documenting all these things is we are becoming these food documentarians, and we'll be able to reference those things in the future. So I don't see a downside.
One of the things you mentioned is that if to really deepen the experience for people, like if you're going to photograph your grandmother's dish, something, mm-hmm. you know, my grandmother made this cake, put yourself in the picture.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put yourself in the picture. And as a professional organizer once said on the podcast, Darla DeMauro, she said, sure, you inherit all these photographs and you think, okay, which beach is that? Mm. Well, which meal is that? Why is that important? Tell the story, save the metadata, add sure. the metadata so that you know what it is and why it's important, if it's that important. Because I find that our camera rolls are quite personal for what we want a memory of. But if I asked my daughter to look at my camera roll, she'd be like, I just don't get it. Like, what is this? Why is this particular place important? This particular time important to you? Or this meal, why is this important to you? So sure. I think it's important to keep track of what the larger story is as you're snapping the latest meal you had on vacation or the beach that you love so much. Sure.
But if you're a true photo detective,
yeah,
you can look at the say, okay, this meal happened on this date, which was close to the wedding anniversary, which was close to the birthday, which was close, you know, you can start to piece it together, because there is a certain amount of even organization within our camera rolls that shows things by date, by, you know, I love those little slideshows that your iPhone will put together for you. That'll like memories of, you know,
yeah,
the Southwest or whatever. And then all of a sudden these pictures come up. So I know what you're saying. Inherently, it will be personalized to a way that not everyone would understand it, but you could probably figure it out if you put enough effort into it.
Yeah. I mean, is it because our camera rolls are chronological? What major holidays that fall next to?
Right.
What major family event did it fall next to, those pictures? And I mean, you said social media is a good thing.
Well, that's a loaded statement, but okay.
For food.
Okay. Well, that's also a loaded statement.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me why.
Well, I think when I look at it from the business of being a food photographer and looking at the evolution of my career, especially because it's perfectly placed in the social media era. I had enough runway to get to a point where I was already well known by the time social media started, and then was able to participate in social media until the point where photographers of my era are struggling to compete with technologies that make what we do so much easier. You know, and I've learned to embrace the idea that there are certain clients that want me to shoot with my iPhone, and that's okay. I've learned to embrace that. But the idea of technical expertise as a photographer is something that's less important at this point than having a good eye and a good story to tell.
True. Very true. Very true. And AI is at just a whole nother level.
Well, of course. And I think, you know, there's something I was looking at just this morning about the thing with Kate Middleton and the hullabaloo around that. And I am actually part of the content authenticity initiative that was organized through Adobe and some other big tech companies. I'm on their advisory board right now. And it's really interesting to me looking at food photography in particular, where we're only a few years away from technology getting to the point where food photographers are completely and utterly obsolete. And I mean, because the other thing is that you're not going to run into copyright issues, and you're not going to run into model release permissions, or the fact that maybe the people on the screen aren't actually real people anymore. You know, all of those things are going to, the technology is going to advance so quickly that we're going to be looking at a lifestyle photo, and we're not going to realize that none of those people actually exist in the real world.
Well, this is very interesting to me, because early in my career, I did many things. And one of the things I did was hire photographers. I did issue model releases.
Sure.
I did hire photographers and negotiate contracts for real pictures. I mean, like, you come with all your equipments and your lights and all of that, you know, which you don't necessarily do today, because everyone thinks you can take a perfect photo with your Galaxy phone or Google phone or iPhone, which they're pretty good, actually.
They are. They are.
Yeah. But I want to know more about this content organization, content authenticity group that you're part of.
Yes. So basically it was started by Adobe, who then enlisted a lot of other media organizations and tech companies to get on board with this idea that they're creating both hardware and software. Because, you know, in order to create a photo, a digital photo, you need a camera. And then, of course, you need to process it through software of some kind. So what they're doing is looking at both ends of this to figure out how to embed content credentials into every photograph taken or processed in this fashion. And then what they've done is they've set up a website that you can check against any photo that you encounter on the web, even if it's a screen grab. So basically, you see a picture of mine and you recognize it as mine, but something subtle has changed. Like the tablecloth is a different color. Okay. You drag that photo into this website and it pops up that there's content credentials embedded in the metadata of this photo. It's linked back to the original photo, and then it shows you all of the manifestations it's gone through to get to the point of the photo you're looking at.
That's amazing. So,
right. And it could also identify whether or not it's an AI-generated image. So I'm pretty sure something like that happened with the Kate Middleton photo, because some of those things were so subtle, so subtle, and seemingly without purpose, right? The idea that some of those changes that happened, but they threw up red flags in whatever software somebody ran that through to figure out if it was a real photo.
But I read somewhere that by looking at the changes, the changes, like you're talking about with your content authenticity, that they could tell exactly what was changed based on sort of a catalog of things that were.
That's exactly what it is. And I'm pretty sure, I think I've seen some of my colleagues with CAI post about this, that the software was actually used in identifying this. So this is something that media organizations have already signed on to, the New York Times, I think the Wall Street Journal. Right now, Disney and Nat Geo are looking into joining CAI. The Associated Press has decided, I think, that they're going to be joining, including Google. I think they're still working on trying to get Meta. But basically, once this becomes industry standard, it is going to combat disinformation, misinformation, AI-generated images, so that at least the public will know what is the provenance of the photograph they're looking at, so they understand whether it's real or not.
Well, this is not a new issue.
Oh, no, of course not.
No, remember when the pyramids got moved?
Yeah.
You remember that example?
Yeah, of course.
The pyramids were moved to make them look fit on the cover of a magazine.
Right. So like these kinds of things are going to become more and more important to identify, and we have tools to identify what's real and what's not real, because we cannot rely on people any longer to tell us what's real and what's not real, because everything is spun and everybody has an agenda, but data has no agenda. You know, straight data has no agenda.
Well, as a person that looks at photographs all day long, right? I'm just a visual person.
Sure.
At this point, sometimes, not 100%, but sometimes you're able to say that's AI generated.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it's only a minute until it looks so real we can't.
That's right. That's right. And it's also about the way we adjust to the reality of photorealistic AI, and how we will start to become more attuned to seeing images that are created by an AI, where then the lines get blurred even further.
Yeah.
So
you get used to it.
That's right. That's right. You know, so it's like cooking the frog, you know, like in the boiling water, like before you know it, we can't tell the difference anymore. So tools like what Adobe has built, I think, is going to help in this regard for those who care. You know, for reputable news organizations and people who want to know the truth about particular imagery, I think that those tools are going to become invaluable in the future of journalism. The Content Authenticity Initiative is probably around 18 months to 2 years old. They started basically, you know, as a small group of people developing the software, and then they put together a team of people who are basically going around to different organizations and evangelizing for this type of technology and showing and demonstrating how the technology is being used. So, for example, most recently they were at the National Geographic, the Storyteller Summit in LA. And they did presentations about the use of the technology and how it can be implemented for journalistic use. And it was very well received. So it's a really interesting technology that I think is going to change the way our relationship with both AI generated and photo manipulation, you know, as we experience it in the media.
Well, of interest to my audience, and this is of interest, obviously, but also for years, people have said, how can I find out if somebody posted my ancestor's photo somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the reverse image searches, like Google Images, for instance, or TinEye, and they're okay, but they're not great. This takes it to a whole nother level. This is not, did somebody reprint my ancestor's photo? But did they drop somebody in that they shouldn't have put in there?
That's right.
That's the new level. I mean, I have heard stories. I did a talk a number of years ago at a national conference about, you know, things to watch for when you post things online. And there was a woman who came up to me and told me, and this is not a new story today, which is her daughter's identity, her image identity, got stolen.
Oh, wow.
And then people changed photographs and put people in and took people out. And it was at that point, it was all still pretty crude editing. But what you're saying is with CAI, we'll now know.
Absolutely. So the idea is that these things will still pop up in the world, but they won't gain as much traction because people will know almost immediately that they're fake.
But as soon as you create something like this,
mm-hmm.
There's a nefarious person that creates something that can strip it out.
Yeah, but you're thinking about some of the most advanced technological companies in the world putting billions of dollars behind it, not a, you know, a black hat hacker who's figuring out how to defeat the system. I think it's probably going to be a much harder task to take on the combined forces of Adobe, Google, you know, and these big tech organizations that are putting a lot of money and resources behind it. So I agree with you. Yes, there's always somebody who's trying to defeat the system, but I think that the alliance that's being created around this particular issue is one that has the ability to probably keep that at bay longer than most.
Well, Andrew, I had you on the podcast to talk about food photography, but this is so much more interesting. I mean, I love food photography. Don't get me wrong.
I've spent 20 years talking about food photography, so it's nice to talk about something other than food photography.
This is amazing. I did not know about CAI, and I'm going to do a whole lot more research into it. Andrew, I want to thank you so much for being on The Photo Detective.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review, and if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.